This is Tell Me More, the Sunday magazine on 101.1 More FM, WBEB Philadelphia. I'm Emily Scheibert. Good morning. This week, Mommy Burnout, How to Reclaim Your Life and Raise Healthier Children in the Process. Dr. Cheryl Ziegler will join us all in this edition of Tell Me More. Today's moms are reaching a breaking point. The socially acceptable standard of the ever-busy, overwhelmed, yet seemingly together mom is finally taking an obvious toll on women's mental and physical health. This endless striving to be the perfect mother at the cost of their own self-care is leaving women sick, anxious, isolated, and too ashamed to speak out. How do you know if you've reached mommy burnout? Among the symptoms listed by Ziegler, you zone out on social media daily and you're sure everyone else's lives are much better than yours. You fantasize about going on vacation by yourself or even being in the hospital just for a break from your kids. You feel tired all the time and are constantly fatigued. You feel like nothing you ever do is good enough, and you sometimes resent your spouse and children. A mother of three herself, Dr. Ziegler's work as a child and family counselor gives her a front row seat to the mommy burnout epidemic. She deemed it too serious for women to just accept and joke about. She's created a mommy burnout prescription plan. She tackles this epidemic in her new book, Mommy Burnout, How to Reclaim Your Life and Raise Healthier Children in the Process.
I wrote Mommy Burnout because I started seeing this pattern of emotional and physical exhaustion and a sense that moms weren't doing a good job. That's what they were self-reporting in sessions. And so I wanted to write this book because what I think has come to light is a lot of the issues have. Women are talking about the things that are making them exhausted and maybe how their kids are driving them crazy and how they use wine in the afternoon to get through the night. But it's all mostly done in a humorous way. And although I have a sense of humor just like anybody else, I'm really here to say, and the reason why I wrote the book is really because it's not funny what's happening, the state of motherhood, the lack of satisfaction within it, the lack of happiness, the rates of depression and anxiety are really alarming for women. And so I'm really here to write the book to share that we really don't need to accept that this is just the way motherhood is and that there are things that we can be doing that are really fundamental to our better families and happier lives.
Women feel a great deal of shame about admitting that they think they don't do a great job mothering. Do you think their self-reporting is actually worse than the real picture?
So I think that socially women do have a tough time admitting what they're feeling, if they're feeling lonely, if they're feeling dissatisfied in their marriages, if they don't feel like a great mom. I do think that that's difficult. And part of it is because we don't yet have a culture to talk about it in a more serious, very real kind of way. We have humor, but we don't have that piece. However, in therapy, when I'm seeing women, they, I think, are really sharing what their honest experiences and beliefs are. And that's a lot of what I wrote about in Mommy Burnout. Each chapter highlighted one or more moms and their stories. And that's when I really got a very good sense of the depth of the strife that today's mother is going through, you know, whether to have a career or not to, how to discipline her children, how to raise her children, you know, constantly feeling like they need to be the perfect parent or they need to have the perfect parenting book or strategy and, you know, that their children need the best of everything. And so I saw a very clear pattern of issues that are stressing moms out, and that's what I'm really here to highlight.
What are the origins of this mommy burnout that you write about?
I think the origin, you know, looking back at the history of motherhood, there certainly have been generations and generations of mothers who experienced stress, and that part is not really new. Even in the late 1950s, early 60s, when I was really doing my research, and I think in the 50s, we have this version of what the mother was like, and she was June Cleaver and, you know, so happy and stayed at home and happily took care of the family. But the truth is that Mommy's Little Helper came out in the late 1950s and early 60s, and that is Valium. So they were essentially sedating themselves and calming their nerves and popping them to really get through the afternoon. And talk about not really talking about things back then. We wouldn't talk about this at all. You went to a psychiatrist who probably told many, many women that they were hysterical and that they just needed to have more sex with their husbands and move on with their lives. So what has happened is we've seen that this has existed over the generations. However, the equal rights movement is something that particularly has affected Generation X and millennial moms. And meaning that the ability to get an education wherever we want and, you know, climb a corporate ladder or do whatever we want to in our careers has been so wonderful on one hand. However, when it becomes a mothering issue, moms are not taking anything off of their plates. They are just adding things on. They're adding work on. They're adding volunteerism on and community support and all of the things that moms feel we are able to do and we want to do. But I think we're realizing that it's truly causing chronic stress, and which leads to burnout. So that's one of the social, kind of the more modern social things that are happening. And the other piece is social media. With this ability to look at other people's lives, and they're really the highlight of their lives. They're certainly not the low lights. They're probably not even the regularity of an everyday life. When you look at those highlights, moms are experiencing the same kind of detrimental effects that teenagers are. So increased rates of depression, increased rates of low self-esteem, and in teenagers, they even have increased rates of suicidal thoughts. So what's happening is when you're constantly spending hours and hours a day online and looking through social media, mindlessly scrolling, probably when you want to tune out from your own life, and looking at what other people's children are accomplishing or what other people's lives are like, it causes a mother to feel terrible about herself, and it sort of perpetuates the notion that we have to be perfect.
I'm very proud of my generation for being one of the first to kind of ask or demand the rights that a lot of us enjoy now in terms of equality, gender equality. But I really, as you're pointing out, I didn't see us at the same time being very realistic about the things we were willing to give up or share or ask for help with. I mean, I think a lot of us wanted all of the sort of rights and benefits, but we also thought we were going to do all the things we saw our moms do, our moms who were stay-at-home moms. So now this generation of mothers is really apparently feeling the pinch for that. If you would share with us some solutions, where can a burned out mom start to reclaim her life in a more authentic way, and in so doing, be a better parent?
Well, it's interesting what you're talking about. You know, when you talk about the generations and models you had before you, some of the things that I have found through the research and through my own anecdotal experience that are really genuinely life-changing for moms has a lot to do with relationships. So the ability to make friends a priority and not put them by the wayside and say that you're too busy, but connect with other women and connecting on multiple levels. Not every woman is going to be your best friend. So you can connect with other women that may have children that are older than you and you can learn from. You can connect with your neighbors. You can connect with, you know, women who have children younger than you and then people who you feel very closely connected to. But women are so isolated these days that they are not doing that. So connecting with other women. Our spouses, we oftentimes put them last. Either ourselves, our own self-care is last, or our spouses last. We look past them. We walk through rooms, and we walk right past them. And, oh, how are the kids doing? And we don't make time for that. You know, intimacy, sex, those kinds of things are just on the decline. So making time for your marriage, and when I talk to groups of women, I say, if you can do a date night regularly, that's wonderful. I am a fan of that. But all of the things that I write about in the book, I try to make them very, very realistic, because sometimes people will say to me, you know, a date night can cost upwards of $200 just to simply get a babysitter, go out, come back home, and that's stressful, you know, for a lot of people. So it doesn't have to be getting a babysitter and making a big to-do about a date night, let's say even every week. It can be just things like making sure you talk to one another every night, making sure you're giving them eye contact, asking your spouse about their day, you know, if your children are old enough, you know, can you even just take a walk together outside? Just finding very realistic moments that can exist so that you put your relationships as a priority. And the third thing really is, in terms of relationship, it's the relationship with thyself. And making, I think one of the things that we could do is making self-care not just all right or acceptable, but actually supported and celebrated. Making it so that if I say I'm going to go work out or I'm going to go do a yoga class or I've always wanted to pursue, you know, art or writing or whatever it is, and that I get to do that and that my spouse supports me and hopefully he also has something that, you know, he's pursuing. Those things are incredibly important because burnout means you've got nothing left to give. And by doing things that fuel our tank, like spending time with people we care about, doing things for ourselves, that's what fuels us so that we are there for our families. So that notion of putting your oxygen mask on first and then attending to your children is exactly right on when it comes to motherhood.
It makes a lot of sense that self-care is high on the list. I think some of us would want to know, where do these time dollars come from? You mentioned being online and social media and so forth, and a lot of us do waste time doing that. So is that, that's obviously one of the places we can cut back, because a lot of us just kind of look at Facebook and think, gee, I'm not doing a very good job curating my life for the rest of the world to see. Where else can we get our time dollars to spend on more connection, more time with our spouse and self-care?
Well, you did start off with the right thing. I mean, if you think about, again, 19 hours a week online is a conservative figure. So if you even just take half of that, 8 hours, if you could have 8 hours back to yourself where you're not doing something that in the end is actually worse for you than better, that would be just 8 hours right there, an hour a day easily. But I would also say that one of the things that I have personally done and I tell most of the women that I'm around to do and so beneficial is almost thinking about pairing self-care with relationship at times. So meaning go outside and do a walk and talk, you know, so you're walking, maybe you're walking for the full hour that either if you're a working mom, you've got, you know, time for lunch and actually make the time for lunch. Most people don't. But take that time to go out and walk with a coworker slash friend, or if you're, you know, a stay-at-home mom, find the time when you're going outside, pushing a stroller or just trying to get your exercise to ask somebody to do it with you. It's like giving yourself therapy for an hour. Even if you're talking about light things, if you're laughing, it is therapeutic to the soul to connect with someone else that you care about. And pairing that with hopefully being outside, getting some sunshine and getting some exercise in. So that's one area that you can do that. But there's also really, there are the pieces where we are spending more time with our kids than we ever have. And yet our kids generationally are under a tremendous amount of stress and feel a lot of pressure. So I really encourage women to think about that whole quality of time with your kids versus quantity of time. Even if you could do something for 30 minutes inside your home where you don't feel like you have to be tending to the children, because I think we're over-tending to our children, but you're really just taking the time to maybe do something for yourself guilt-free, I think those are the kinds of subtle, small shifts that we can do. We can do starting today that in the end, everybody's better off by mom having taken that time.
Yes, what is the residual effect for kids? I mean, a healthier mom means a better life for a child, right?
It really does. And, you know, by no means is the book, you know, blaming moms. But when we look at what is happening, let's say right now, with our generation of children that are middle school and teenagers, they have just surpassed Generation X as the most stressed out generation that we have ever studied. We are seeing over the last 10 years a 70% increase in suicide rates for children ages 10 to 14. We are seeing anxiety diagnosed in 1 in 5 children. We are having a true mental health crisis that's happening in our kids, and it's very hard to say we could possibly separate the stress that their parents are feeling and that, you know, that they're not connected. They have to be interconnected and interrelated. And what I say to parents when they ask about that, and, you know, they certainly want to know about that, because this generation of parents, all they want is what's best for their kids. And so I just say, in your quest to try to find what's best for your kids, what's happening is there is, I think, the notion of perfectionism and always striving for the best. That is, it's in us, and I think it's trickling down into our kids. When I talk to kids, which I do all the time, and read the research, one of the top things they say is that they feel pressure. They just feel a lot of pressure to be an amazing athlete, an amazing artist, an amazing student, those kinds of things. And so we just don't seem to allow anymore for being average or, you know, doing great in one area and just okay in another area. It's just, for some reason, we've gotten in this pattern where that's not good enough. And so we'll get the tutors and we'll get the private coaching. We'll do whatever it takes. And what, again, in the quest for trying to do what we think is best for our kids, it's actually not what's best for our kids. And so there's really a lot to be said for teaching kids coping skills. When you are not the best at everything, when you're not, you know, valedictorian of your class, when you're, you know, not chosen for a team, instead of us going and arguing and fighting with administrations, teachers, and coaches, that's what we're modeling for them. Instead, what we need to be modeling for them are coping skills. And that's, you know, also what the research says is lacking in this generation of kids, is they don't have coping skills. And I just did a talk last night in which I asked the moms, what are your coping skills? What functional and dysfunctional coping skills do you have? Because what are you teaching your kids? And that definitely really affected, you know, a lot of people, just them really kind of wide-eyed thinking about what do I do? So there's a big piece around the interconnectedness of our families and then, of course, our community and society at large and how stress is an epidemic.
This striving for perfection, I do see around me, and I do see quite a bit of it, and it's so hard on women who are trying to pull this off. It's not achievable, as we know, and we have a cousin whose 11-year-old son was a really great swimmer, and he was on the swim team at his middle school, and the coach approached her one day and said, we just want to tell you that your son has Junior Olympic times, and you need to take a close look at what you want to do about that. And so I said, well, what do you want to do about that? And she said, well, I asked him, and he just wants to be a kid. He doesn't want to do anything about it. And so that's what we're doing, which for a moment I thought, oh, that's sad. You know, he's got this potential to maybe be at the Olympics and mm-hmm. he's not interested. Why should he decide? He's 11. Are you crazy? You know, so there was, I understand that. But then when I was thinking about it, I thought, well, what a great parental move to say it's not as important that he get a gold medal as it is for him to have like a normal childhood where he kind of does what he wants and learns from those things, even if the bar isn't set so high.
Absolutely. And that type of mom, that's pretty rare to come by these days, I would really commend, because for all you know, in a year, 2-3 years from now, he says, you know what, I want to take this to this next level. Or thanks, Mom, I'm so glad I never did. You know, this idea that our kids have to be sort of prodigies or superstars as young kids, and it is getting younger and younger in which that pressure is being felt, is something that we all need to pay attention to and really take a kid's lead. I mean, I think that's where parents struggle. Where do they have the fine line of parenting and making choices for their kids? And then the balance of like, okay, and then when do I know when to follow my child's lead? You know, and so people will say more and more to me, I'm sure this wasn't a thing in other generations, where kids will say, you know, I need a break today. I don't want to go to practice today, or I need a mental health break today. And so I think that's something, that's a coping skill. That's something that we do need to teach our kids, is when to say, I'm really tired. I need a break. I don't want to go to practice. Or, you know, and so parents have said to me, but how do I balance that with telling my kids, but you make a commitment, and when you make a commitment, you have to follow through. And the question back to them is, at what cost? Is that like us with work, where we're workaholics? Is that what you want? Is that the legacy you want to leave for your kids? You know, you work, so you make a commitment until you drive yourself to the ground. I mean, that's essentially, in some ways, some of the values that we're passing down to our young kids.
Give us some more advice for answering burnout factor when mothers find that they're feeling fried.
Yeah. So some of the other things to really look for kind of even just going off of what we said, is looking at choices and really trying to limit the choices that we'll allow ourselves to get caught up in, as well as the amount of choices that we're offering to even toddlers. What we know, again, the research shows that the more choices we have, there's a really small finite amount of choices that feels good to people, right? So we don't like, obviously, having no choice in life. But what's happened is we have so many choices in life that when you get in the mix of it, I've had new moms, I mean, tell me how freaked out they were about buying a stroller or buying a car seat or, you know, picking out, you know, baby gear, all the way to college, which was the story that I highlighted in the book, you know, choosing colleges. And I think I tried to curate how many. There's over like 3,000 colleges and universities to choose from. And it's overwhelming. So learning how to limit choices within ourselves and learning how to do that for our kids really helps with burnout. The other thing is this notion of being so busy. So chapter 8 is titled, I Just Can't Get It All Done. And there's this notion that when we say we're busy, oh, I'm so busy. So, oh, how are you? Oh, I'm just crazy busy. I'm sure we hear people say that every day, maybe ourselves, maybe we say that every day. But when you do that, what it does is somehow we've created that busy is some badge of honor to be proud about. That when I'm busy, that means I'm important. And I'm so important that I don't have time for you. And I don't have time for anything else because I'm just so busy. So I really, really encourage women to think about that shift and think about what does it actually mean and communicate to other people when you say you're so busy. It has multiple implications, and just that one tweak in our languaging can actually make a huge difference in the relationships that we have and in what we actually do with our time.
How do we know where our limit is? Maybe some of us are flying along and we think we're pulling it off. Are we likely to hit a wall and not expect it at all?
Yeah, I think if women take a really close look at themselves and the different areas of their lives, I'd say many of them, millions of them, will find that, wow, I didn't slow down to think about, you know, how my stress is affecting my marriage, how my stress is affecting my kids, how it's affecting my own health. You know, my friendships, so many people have said to me, you know, I reached out to my best friend or I reached out to somebody who I've always wanted to get in touch with and I got together with them and I can't tell you how great that felt. Like they don't even realize that they're missing that relationship connection or that their spouses are feeling, you know, really underappreciated because they get in the mode too. They're kind of like, oh, we had kids. I mean, there's sort of a typical story that can happen for the spouse. We had kids. She got, you know, so involved in them from the start, you know, from the moment we were in the hospital or nursing, it was just, you know, her and that baby and, you know, her whole life is that now. And they just sort of come to accept it, although it doesn't feel good for them. And maybe they argue about it for a while and then they give up. So I will say that even just today, I got a message from someone that said, you know, I read your book because I knew who you were and I like a lot of the things that you have to say, but I honestly didn't go into it thinking that it would apply to me. And then their message said, and 100% of it applied to me. Every chapter, there was something that I could strongly relate to. This is a huge eye-opener, like, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think that's it. And sometimes I hear burnout. And they think, well, I don't know, I'm still functioning, you know, I'm still going to work, my family's still functioning, I'm not burned out. But burnout just means that we are chronically stressed, and we're probably running in a cycle of stress. So really, mommy burnout is, I think it's a pause for women to slow down, take a little bit of time for yourself, read about what other moms are going through. And I have yet to find someone, a couple of people have said, reading the book made me feel good because I realized that I'm doing better than maybe I even thought I was. I am doing these things. It felt really good to get validated that like I really am doing healthy things for myself and my family. So a couple people have been like that, but for the most part, I think women have been really surprised to go, oh yeah, because we don't pause very often to think about ourselves. We're all about our kids.
When I think about the holidays, I think that's such a great example, a living example of how things have gotten over the top for moms. And, you know, I was talking to a friend about this, like, why is it so much worse now? What is it about today that makes women feel so fried and resentful and exhausted around the holidays? And there's just so much to be perfect at the holidays, the gift buying. Now we have this sort of aesthetic in the home, you know, the home decor factor that maybe our moms didn't deal with. You know, you had a tree, but nobody was making a centerpiece and dressing the table and arranging for anyway. But I think of that as such a great example of how things can get overblown and really, really, really end up in a burnout factor for mother and dad.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're right. I think that I never had this growing up, even a sense of judgment, even through a kid's eyes, of going into someone's house and saying, oh, you know, the Smiths just decorate their house so nicely. It just was like everybody just kind of had lights up, icicles, fake icicles, ornaments. You know, it was just, there was sort of a standard. Maybe you decorated the outside of your home with lights and you had a tree inside. And so, yes, this year in 2017, I contributed to an article about mommy burnout during the holidays for the Washington Post, and it was just holiday burnout. And it's very, very real, you know, and even the movie Bad Moms, the second one that was around Christmas, was hysterical, and it did highlight the absurdity of how we've gotten caught up in things, and why that's happened, I think, in part, goes back to this social media piece. You get to take pictures of your beautifully homemade centerpieces and your turkey and your tree and your lights and post it for everybody to tell you how amazing you are. And it's very validating. So I think social media, you know, as supposedly we're more connected than ever, we're really just lonelier than ever, and we need a ton of validation that says my home is beautiful, my kids are great, you're doing a good job.
And my pet is adorable, too.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, the book is Mommy Burnout, How to Reclaim Your Life and Raise Healthier Children in the Process. Its author, Dr. Cheryl Ziegler, has been my guest. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Dr. Cheryl Ziegler's book is Mommy Burnout, How to Reclaim Your Life and Raise Healthier Children in the Process. Thanks for joining me this morning. You can email the show or browse the archive. Just log on to morefmphilly.com and click on Tell Me More. For 101.1 More FM, I'm Emily Scheibert.